This is F1 Debrief, Thick Green and Yellow. Coming up this week, we discuss tyres, skipping races, Ferrari moaning, Doctor Who, green paint, plus a special Tremaine.
Are we nearly there yet?
Where?
There, the start of the season, Bahrain.
Oh, you sounded like a five-year-old in the back of the car.
I'm feeling it's getting close.
Yes, it is getting close. Everyone keeps telling me. Three weeks to go.
3 weeks?
Yep.
Is that all we've got left?
Yep. Good week, bad week. It's been a good week for the Great Tyre War, as there are reports that Michelin are in formal discussions with the FIA to return to F1. We've been wanting them to come back since they left, although it's not clear what's changed their minds. Apparently, there are conditions to their return, including that the regulations show the performance they can bring, notably in terms of fuel saving and CO2 reductions.
It's not a good week for the Tyre War, though. Is it because this isn't going to be a tyre war between Michelin and Bridgestone because Bridgestone are leaving?
Yeah, that's true.
And when Michelin left, one of the reasons they gave was that they want to see a competitive action within Formula One. They don't want to be the sole tyre supplier. So what's changed?
I don't know, but I do like that Bibendum will be back. It's been a bad week for race fans as the Abu Dhabi government have bought the Yas Marina circuit, saving the developers from bankruptcy. It could have meant the track disappeared off the calendar, but the government have stepped in to purchase the circuit, the utilities and the yacht club. The racing will continue.
I'm not sure that developers were ever that close to bankruptcy. I think they just needed to offload some of their assets in order to boost their bank balance. And thankfully, the Abu Dhabi government stepped in to do that for them.
Thankfully?
Maybe not thankfully.
It's been a good week for Ferrari, as Alonso has proclaimed the new car to be the best he has ever driven. He was testing in Jerez on Friday and Saturday, completed almost 270 laps, and concluded, "There are no reasons to be pessimistic. As of today, this is the best car I've ever had." Really?
Better than his title-winning Renault?
Seems a bit odd.
That's some compliment.
Well, last year...
I'm amazed that Alonso genuinely believes that.
Last year, the Ferrari was awful.
And so was the Renault. I can understand the guy's had a pretty bad car for a few years, but the best car he's ever had.
It's been a bad week for Alvaro Parente, as he is no longer the test driver for Virgin Racing. He has had to pull out, as the Tourism Institute of Portugal aren't going to sponsor him after all. He said, "I have some propositions to do some GT Open races, and we've had some contact with Super League. Nothing is confirmed, but it wasn't what I wanted." I can't believe Super League is what anyone wants, really.
He wasn't announced at the Virgin launch, was he?
I think he was announced at the same time as that Ratzia bloke.
Gotcha. Well, there was rumours surrounding the Virgin launch that never happened, that there were issues with one of the test driver sponsorships. I'm assuming it fell apart right at the last minute, and that's why he didn't appear in any of the pictures. News and views. The non-existent teams are struggling, or have been struggling this week, have they not?
They really have. It's all been kicking off. There were reports in the Argentinian newspapers that Peter Windsor had admitted to J-Lo, their only driver, that the team were going to miss the first race of the season. So we all got a bit hysterical, as
Did
you can
we?
Imagine. Yeah.
Okay. I don't recall getting hysterical. I may have missed that whole conversation.
And even more so when their website died.
I saw that.
Which actually was probably because everyone was going there to check what was going on.
Right. Okay, so their official website just went down mysteriously.
Yeah, and that made us even more hysterical.
Right. I'm missing this hysteria this week.
But it turns out that the team are struggling. They've admitted that, and they've lost some major sponsorship deals, and they are appealing to the FIA for them to be able to miss the first four races.
This is Ken. Ken did an interview with the New York Times.
Mr. Anderson.
Eventually, finally, the guy decides to speak up. I mean, taking a vow of silence when the knives are out against your team is not ever the best thing to do, and I'm surprised it took Ken this long to come forth and speak. What did he have to say when he finally broke his silence?
Well, he said, "We're working with the FIA to clarify how many races we can miss." So it's not even like there's an option. They are definitely going to miss races. "In an ideal world, we can miss the first four races and show up in Barcelona. Why would they give us a franchise and just the first time there's a bump in the road, yank it and put it out of business? That's definitely not the message that I'm getting from them. They want to help us, not shut us down." They can't miss four races. That's ridiculous. If they miss four races, I'm missing four races too.
That's a fair deal. I will accept that. That seems completely fair. That's fair enough to me. If USF1 can do it, so should you be able to. I don't think USF1 are going to be allowed to do this. There's nothing in the regulations that will let them. I don't think Bernie wants that to happen. It's going to be very weird having them show up in Barcelona.
Well, the FIA spoke out about three races, didn't they?
Yes.
They said, no, that's not happening. That's against the Concorde Agreement. So why would they just say, oh, actually, yeah, it's all right. Miss an extra one as well.
Well, see, it's hard to work out exactly what's going on here because the original three race quote came from Jean Todt, but he claims he was misquoted. Now it looks like he wasn't misquoted at all. And there have been discussions going on regarding or relating to this. The problem that the FIA have is they gave USF1 the entry. They sanctioned the team. They did the due diligence to say USF1 have a good business plan. They're a solid team. They're not going to be an embarrassment to F1. And in return, they gave that place to F1 and in return discarded other potential Formula One entries. Who may
people
have
people that
actually,
know how to make teams.
People like Dave Richards. They cast Dave Richards aside and said, no, you're not going to do that. Now, there was rumour, and we did discuss this on the show, that the reason USF1 and other teams were accepted was because they agreed to use the Cosworth engine. Now, that has never been proved. Stefan GP were going to challenge it in court, but pulled that appeal, and that hasn't gone through. And we may never know what happened there. However, it leaves the FIA in a really tough position because if they now say USF1 isn't a solid business and we're going to pull their entry, it's going to look bad for the FIA who gave it to them in the first place.
It's interesting because Dan Brunel, who comments on our site quite a lot, he had, or he still has, a blog that was sort of dedicated to the USF1 effort. And he was quite upset by the whole thing, as you can imagine. But he was kind of saying that it means everyone's going to judge America and their inability to create a team. But I don't think that. I judge the FIA. I judge Peter Windsor and Ken Anderson. I don't judge any of America for that.
I don't judge America either for that. And I think maybe Dan's worrying over nothing in that respect. Although he did make a couple of good points that America does appear to be jinxed when it comes to F1.
It certainly doesn't help.
No. I think the best point in the comments was made by Alex this week. And he pointed out that because the team is called USF1, and because it desperately wants to be known as the American F1 team, it's actually scuppering its own title-bearing chances because they can't take on a title sponsor because the team is already called USF1, whereas Virgin Racing, you have the title within the team name, or say ING Renault, you had the title within the name, whereas USF1 just says United States Formula One. And because they've gone down that angle, they've actually cut off one potential revenue stream.
Well, so they couldn't be YouTube USF1.
It doesn't say all American team, does it? I mean, no. They could do, I guess. It's not too late to do that. I get the impression that's not what they wanted to do. And therefore, they're not helping themselves.
As is always the case, you just have to feel sorry for the people that are working there. All those people that we saw in those USF1 videos.
Yep.
And Lopez, of course.
I don't think I feel sorry for Lopez, to be honest with you. He has the backing of his government. He has been sniffing around Campos, I believe.
Has he?
He's been shopping himself around. And he's got money, he's got backing, and there's no reason that he won't find another drive this year. I don't think we need to be weeping over J-Lo.
Well, Campos seem to have sorted out their problems for now, because there's obviously been lots of sponsorship issues over there as well. But one of the shareholders, Jose Ramon Carabante, which is a great name, by the way, he's taken full control of the team and installed Colin Collis as team principal. And he was at Force India before, wasn't he?
He was, wasn't he, at Spyker / Midland?
Ah.
I don't think he ever made it to Force India. I forget exactly. No, I don't think he did. I could be wrong, and someone may correct me. Colin Collis, we do know, we have spoke about him before. I'm not too sure we rated him at Midland and Spyker, but maybe it was the type of team environment he was in that meant he couldn't get the best out of the team. I am slightly worried for the name Campos, though, because Adrian Campos,
he's gone.
He's no longer in the team. So what are they going to be called in the future? You've now got two teams on the grid. You've got BMW Sauber, which have nothing to do with BMW, and Campos Meta, which have nothing to do with Campos. What's going on with namings this year?
It is a bit odd. Carabante said, I would like to thank Bernie Ecclestone, who worked tremendously to support our efforts to keep the team viable. The whole rescue operation has been a race against time with the goal of always having the team run two competitive cars at the first Grand Prix of the F1 season in Bahrain, which I think is a bit odd because we really didn't know much that there was a rescue operation going on. We knew they were struggling.
Yes.
Seems a bit odd.
Well, people have taken a vow of silence again in this team. It's another team that the FIA have given an entry to and have been struggling to make ends meet. And yet again, they've taken a vow of silence and nobody's been telling us what's been going on.
But it's still not 100% that they're okay because Colin Collis said, over the next 10 days, we will review the entire operation, find the extra funding to ensure the team will make the first race in Bahrain, announce the lineup for 2010 in due time, and make the operation viable. That is a lot of work for 10 days.
I'm surprised he didn't go all the way and then say, and then we're going to win the 2010 World Championship. It worked for Braun. It could happen.
It could happen.
I don't think it's going to happen. That is a heck of a lot to do. That's a week and a bit. And what? That wasn't even yesterday that was made, was it? When did he say that? Friday. So at the time of recording, we're 3 days into his 10 days. He's got 7 days left to do all of that.
From teams that don't quite exist yet then, to ones that do and have cars out on track, testing continued in Jerez, and it continued to rain.
Last week, I did claim to be bored of testing already. Things improved slightly this week, along with the weather. Not much, but slightly.
Well, it got better towards the end of the week, but earlier on, it was still raining quite a lot, and Ferrari were moaning and moaning.
Goodness me. Goodness me.
I've never known such a bunch of whingers.
It's like your private Italian Met office coming from the Ferrari Twitter service. It's raining, it's desperately awful, we can't test, it's too cold,
so
it's
frustrating.
Too wet, it's miserable.
We're keeping Massa in the garage.
We hate it, we don't want to be here, we'd rather be in Bahrain. That's pretty much what it said all week.
What's
the weather today? Rain.
They stopped at saying Bahrain, but that was basically the gist
of
it.
That's what they meant. What they were saying is, if we had the choice, we could go wherever we wanted to go, we'd go to Bahrain. Sadly, we don't have the choice.
There were some interesting things to note, though, over the 4 days. There were 11 teams on track, so that must be the first time that's happened for a long time.
Is that the first time since Super Aguri bailed?
Ah, it could be.
Might be. Don't quote me on that, but it has been a long time. 11 cars, excellent.
Heikki Kovalainen, he joined Twitter.
He did.
And he was tweeting from the garage as the test driver, Fauzi, was in the car. That's... Why wasn't Heikki in the car?
He was going for his Super license, I believe.
Ah, right.
So he had to get a lot of miles in.
It was quite funny because Fauzi ran the car all day. He didn't have any power steering because the supplier let them down, which isn't good.
We haven't seen that since Bernardi were in F1.
No. He ran the car all day and there was fine and not a scratch on it. Kovalainen took over for 4 hours. He binned it.
He stuck it in the wall.
Yep.
So tweeting didn't help him at all then.
No.
Goodness me.
How embarrassing.
I think it could be down to the power steering. That may be the only excuse we can offer Heikki Kovalainen, the guy shouldn't have been pushing that car that hard on a track in that condition. It was wet, it was slippery, they just needed more and more miles, and you could tell from Mike Gascoigne, who's also on Twitter, his frustration was evident in 140 characters. He really, really, really didn't want the second day testing to end as quickly and as abruptly as it did when Heikki stuck it in the wall.
The weather did clear up towards the end of the test, and Bridgestone man Andy Stobart tweeted that the last day of testing on Saturday was the only useful tyre running that they got.
That's quite shocking. From 2 weeks of testing.
Yeah.
What a disaster. European weather was not playing fair.
With only Barcelona left, that is kind of cutting things a bit fine, isn't
Barcelona, it? Barcelona was always going to be important because it's a proper aero circuit. Jerez doesn't tell you enough about the aero of cars, and we'll get a much better impression of who's where next week. But with the weather the way it has been, all eyes are going to be on Barcelona.
Whilst we're talking about tyres and wheels and such like, there's some stuff about wheel nuts that you want to talk about, isn't there?
Oh, it sounds like you don't want to talk about wheel nuts.
How much can there be to say about them?
Actually, it's very interesting. It might be the key to the season.
The wheel nuts are interesting.
Yes. The wheel nuts, seriously, mark my words, you can quote me on this at the end of the year. Wheel nuts are going to be vital this year.
Okay.
And do you know why?
I don't know. Because they might get stuck.
Well, we've seen that in the past. That isn't the big issue. Refueling is banned this year, as we know. And that means the onus is on the tyre changers to be quick, because they are the ones against the stopwatch. Last year, they had all the time in the world because the rate of fuel flowing through the refueler limited how fast the pit stop could happen. So we saw pit stops in the 8-second range. This season, it's all going to be down to how fast the tyres can be changed. And teams are talking 2.5, 3, 3.5 seconds-ish to change four tyres and get the car back out again.
Blink and you'll miss it.
Absolutely. It's really, really important. Now, I think Joe got word that Ferrari were Ferrari might be the team to watch this year, because he posted this week that they've been doing some extreme development on wheel nuts, because they know it's important, and they are
looking... Extreme wheel nuts.
Oh, yes. This is F1. It's the pinnacle of wheel nut technology, I tell you. And my favourite new blogger, Craig Scarborough, has noticed that the front wheel fairings on the Ferrari are different. He pointed this out at the launch and has managed to see a closer-up close-up picture of them since, and you'll find, you know, that the wheel bins that are banned this year, we've got rid of them finally.
The big circle things.
The silly things that we hate, and the spinners that keep falling off in the middle of the race, they're gone. However, Ferrari have a smaller-looking bearing and a new wheel nut on the front wheels, and that might be, or that might prove to be, a competitive advantage for them, because if they find a really quick and safe way to get the wheel nuts off the car and back on, you could be looking at sub 2.5 second pit stops, and that will be a sight to behold, and that might be the key to winning the world championship or both world championships this season. You never know. You don't sound like you're taking this seriously.
Wheel nuts.
It's those vital, vital hundredths of a second. Unless you're Toro Rosso and you miss your pit box and go in the wrong one.
Well, there is that. It's also been noted that Mercedes have traffic lights.
Again. Well, not again, because obviously it's a new team this year, but we saw this before. This was...
Was that before they were born, when they were Honda?
This was back in Brazil 2008, I think, we first saw Honda copying Ferrari's ill-fated traffic light design.
Well, did we think it might be a Ross Brawn thing or something?
Possibly, yeah. I think he probably looked at the Ferrari design and thought, we could do better than this. But because Honda became Brawn, and Brawn didn't have a whole heap of money last year, I think he got sidelined, and it wasn't that important because we know it doesn't work so well with refuelers.
It was quite dangerous, really, wasn't it?
It was seriously dangerous, as we saw in Singapore. This year, now that we're back to a non-refueling pit stop, they might prove to be vital again. So therefore, Mercedes are invested in the technology, and we've seen them appear in all the tests so far this year.
I don't see that it's going to be any less dangerous, though, because the problem with it was that the guy controlling the traffic lights wasn't in the right place or couldn't see and wasn't watching, and he let people out into other cars and stuff like that. So yes. I can still see mechanics getting pulled over and cars crashing into each other in the pit lane.
It could be a nightmare. There's a video somewhere on YouTube where the front jack man at Mercedes fell over, which was quite amusing. It was a slippery floor, and he went flying, and the car fell down off the jacks. So, you know, there's still a human element that could go wrong, and they're trying to remove as much of that as possible, because your reactions can only be so quick. And you know, you may see Ferrari's traffic light system come back, and you may see that becoming somewhat significant, more significant this year.
To sum up the week of testing, Button was the driver with the fastest time of all 4 days, which is compared to Hamilton, who was down in 14th. Now, obviously, it doesn't mean anything, and the weather was a big variable and all that, but that can't do much for Hamilton's oomph.
Oomph.
Being that far away from his teammate.
Hamilton's oomph has been affected by that. I don't know what kind of huge difference it will make. Button put those times in on the last day, and we know that the last day was the best day, and that's really not useful as any kind of comparison.
It might just be a psychological thing. I mean, it has been noted that Hamilton isn't exactly happy anyway, so...
Okay. Maybe it could be strike one. In the battle of the teammates, that is strike one to Jensen.
Hülkenberg completed the most laps this week, 275 altogether. That's enormous amounts. But poor old Degrassi, he had the least. Only 34. 34 laps.
Virgin is looking fragile.
Poor old Virgin. James Allen wrote a post summing up what he saw in testing. And there are a couple of things. He said that Williams are more difficult to judge, as they have done predominantly long runs with heavy fuel and have been putting the new Cosworth engine through exhaustive reliability runs, which makes it hard to judge their true pace.
That's an interesting point, actually, because Williams are the only team who are managing to do that, what with Heikki Kovalainen hitting the wall.
Yeah.
And Virgin being unable rubbish. To get out of the garage. Williams and also USF1 not doing anything, and Campos not doing anything. That leaves all of the grunt work for Cosworth's testing to Williams.
James Allen also said, Alonso is being quoted at 4-1 for the championship, and that looks like a very good bet to me at this stage of the game.
Ooh.
Well, Alonso also said it's the best car he's ever driven, so that's I might make true. That bet.
Really? Okay.
Well, I don't do betting because I don't understand it, but...
In theory, yeah. you might take James up on that. I'm interested to see what happens at Barcelona. That's really going to show us, because the Ferrari, if it has the long-range pace, if it can look after its tyres, then that's a pretty good bet for the season. I have an inkling that Williams might be okay too, though. They, you know, now that they've got rid of that silly Toyota engine at the back of it, which was obviously completely useless, and they've got rid of those silly drivers who used to sit in the cockpit, and they've got two good drivers, and they've got a decent engine, I have high hopes for Williams this year.
The thing that is really interesting, though, is the Lotus versus Virgin Racing battle, isn't it? Because it even extends out of testing. Because there's been videos and things released this week. There was one with Heikki and a horse.
Yes.
Now, that wasn't actually a Lotus video, but it was Heikki and there was a horse.
Was it for MTV3 in Finland? It's a brilliant video.
You say brilliant.
I loved it. Did you not like it?
There was a horse.
Do you not like rough hikey, like roughing it in the cold and snow and stuff. Do you not see that? Outrunning a horse hoop. What's wrong with that? I liked it.
Okay.
Didn't do it for you?
The one I liked was from Virgin because it had Degrassi and Glock messing about. They were sitting in the gravel, pretending they were on a beach.
That was funny.
Yeah.
Virgin Holidays. Yeah. That was a great way to yeah, that's a great take on a gravel trap. Original, I like it. Good thinking from Virgin. There was a comment earlier this week, which I loved it, and it was something along the lines of, never has so much attention been put on last place at all. And that's where we're looking. We're looking right at the back of the field. We're looking at Virgin and we're looking at Lotus and we're saying, who's doing the better out of those two? Because they're not in the same league as all the other teams. It's a separate battle. And one is slow and reliable, whilst the other is fast and fragile. Well, and watching that play out is going to be excellent.
You say fast. It's a little bit faster.
Relative to its only known competitor, then. Yeah. The drivers are going to be really important. I mean, it's such a great lineup. You've got two fantastically charismatic drivers in Virgin, but lacking experience. And then you've got Heike and Trulli in Lotus, the opposite end of the charisma scale, if you like.
That's the polite way of putting it.
Yes, but they have more experience, and they have the means of pulling it together. You have Gascoigne with the experience. You have Wirth versus Wirth with almost no successful F1 experience. It's just going to be fantastic to watch it all unfold. I'm loving it. But, you know, again, they're right at the back of the field. They're nowhere near the sharp end.
It seems like Lotus are winning so far, though, because they had a better launch and they have a more reliable car.
That's true. Are we scoring these two?
No.
Thus far?
No.
Well, there's nothing to score this week. There's no launches.
That's true.
We're all launched out.
The last thing to say on testing is that we had a great guest post from Braun to Be Wild, who actually went to Jerez on Saturday and experienced the test firsthand. And she wrote us a great post with all the things that she saw and some pictures. And it's a really good read.
Loving this. We asked during the week for, was it on last week's show? I forget where it was mentioned, but we asked for people's experiences at races. So races you've been to in the past or races you might be going to this year. We're looking for people to write about what happened. Give us your perspective and we'll put it on the blog. And thanks to Braun to Be Wild, because it was an excellent insight into what went down at Jerez. And it really sort of gave me a better insight into what it was like to attend.
There's plenty of chatter on sidepodcast.com, but things get even more creative on our wiki. There's a book group, a custom dictionary, sidepodcast diaries, and a place to share your own circuit designs. There's information about the shows, and you can register your interest in appearing on an upcoming podcast. Visit wiki.sidepodcast.com, sign up for a free account, and get involved. I would like to start with a quick hello to Victorian Doctor, who tweeted me and said, sending a shout out from Victoria, BC, Canada, from a huge F1 fan and Vettel supporter, go RBR.
Hey.
And I just wanted to shout them out because they have a picture of Doctor Who as their little avatar thing, so they're already my best friend.
Oh, for goodness sake.
A quick catch up on some feedback we did last week. We talked about the McLaren hoodie vote. Designer hoodie thing. That's what it's officially called.
The McLaren Vote designer hoodie thing.
Yeah.
Catchy.
It's on the McLaren fan blog, which is Steve's blog, and he is having the best week ever, isn't he?
Yes. I think he's actually bowled over by the reaction. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of responses and votes for what you'd like to wear, what McLaren attire you'd like to have them make, and what you'd buy if they put it in their shop. And they're going to put the winner in their shop. And do you know what? I think I might buy it.
Really?
I'm kind of tempted. Because I want to support this whole interactive social thing, you know? So maybe the right thing to do is just to go out and buy one of these, whoever wins.
Absolutely. I think the vote is still up at the moment, isn't it? So if you haven't yet, you can go and have your say.
Link in the show notes.
Hi, Side Podcast. My name's Dan. I'm a new listener to the show. It was just something that you were talking about on last week's show regarding the British Racing Green Colour Team on the Lotus. Basically, I have the answer to your question regarding what Jaguar were doing with it back in the day. I work as a journalist, and at the time I was at uni doing a motorsport website. And I interviewed one of the team members at Jaguar who were doing the paint scheme at the time, one of the graphic designers. And I asked him the question about the British Racing Green colour scheme and whether the colour scheme was to do with the weight of the paint. And the answer is actually wasn't that. They decided not to use proper British Racing Green because it didn't show up right on the TV, hence the advertising. So they had to go for the lighter colour for the TV cameras. So I hope that answers the question. Keep up the good work. Love the show. Cheers. Bye.
Thank you, Dan.
Before you jump in and start talking about that, we also had an email on the same subject from Tim.
Oh, right.
He said, "Hi, Christine. I'm a huge fan of the podcast. We don't get much F1 coverage in New Zealand, so SciPodcast is my main source of F1 information / entertainment. On your last SciPodcast, you brought up that British racing green was too heavy to use for modern racing. I work at a paint store part-time to fund my studenting escapades, and I noted after hearing the last podcast that the dark green tinter we use, known as SS in the business, which would be closest to a British racing green, is much thicker, heavier than the lighter colours, whites, reds, etc. This is because it has more pigments in it to get that darker, richer colour, which makes the paint physically heavier. So there you go, it's probably true. Anyway, keep up the awesome side podcasting. I look forward to the start of the new season and the side pod coverage to come with it. Regards, Tim." So, wonderful. We still don't know if it's true.
Well, we do know. Dan answered the question because he spoke to the person who was working on the paint scheme at Jaguar, and they said the reason that they chose the lighter colour was because it could be seen on track. So that's clearly the reason. However, it sounds like Tim has noted that it may well also be heavier. Now, there's
so that
two
might
things.
Just be an added bonus.
There's lots of added bonuses because, firstly, the new green matched the sponsor's colours. It may have been lighter, and it was easier to see on track. All of this doesn't bode well for Lotus, though, does it?
No.
Because they've got a potentially heavy paint scheme that's completely invisible to TV cameras.
Thick green and yellow. Moving on then, we've got lots of feedback this week. We have lots of feedback every week. I still need to do my mailbag show.
We'd only have half a show.
That is true. It'd be like a 10-minute news show.
Well, we'd have lots and lots and lots of podcasts.
Yeah.
They'd all be very, very short.
Well, you like that kind of thing.
What's the difference between this and F1 Minute, though?
Well, that's true. This is from Zach. It says, "I listened to several episodes of your podcast for the first time during a long drive this week. I'm hooked. You guys are entertaining, informative, and mostly fun. I'd just like to let you know you made my long drive seem to go by quickly. Thanks."
Mostly fun.
Mostly
fun. Be more fun. Who's that from?
That was from Zach.
Thanks, Zach.
This one is from Lewis, who has contacted us before. He says, "Hello, it's been a while since I've been on the site and outside projects have kept me away. However, I have still managed to keep listening to the podcast. While I was on my side pod hiatus..."
Not allowed.
What? A hiatus?
Yeah.
Why not?
You can't be on a side podcast hiatus.
Oh, really?
We don't allow it. We didn't ask permission.
That's true.
Or, you know, you got to ring. We worry.
I had been looking for new
didn't
news...
Didn't call, didn't write...
Shush. "I had been looking for new news outlets to feed my F1 hunger. Nothing reached the standard that you had reached. You had been constantly going on about Twitter, so I thought I'd give it a go. Ugh, never have I been so stressed with a website. I just cannot get used to it. I thought I'd do a written rant. I've forgotten the SBC name for it. That would be a Tremaine. Since I'm not doing a voicemail, it may veer off the topic of Twitter depending on how angry I get. Are you ready, Christine?" So here goes. "Grr, why does Twitter have to have such confusing
jargon?" You're
rubbish
jargon? At grrs, grr, by the way.
Well, you do it then.
Well, I can't read out loud.
Well,
I'll do the girls if you read out loud.
Okay, then.
Grrr.
"Why does Twitter have to have such confusing jargon? Retweet sounds like a tape recording of a pigeon.
Grrr.
What's with the at signs? I just need a guide. Somebody help.
Grrr.
Don't get me started on team launches. They have given no effort.
Grrr.
White on a Ferrari. Curse you, Santander. Turquoise on silver.
Grrr.
Stupid Mercedes." That was quite scary. That
went quite well.
Yeah. He says, "Must constrain myself. I feel much better now that I've spilled my anger with technology and colour schemes. I know the majority of the world will disagree with the Twitter part of the rant. Keep up the brilliant work, Lewis."
So do I. I feel much better for that too.
Next up, we wanted to give a quick shout out to a new project from AD at F1 Tailpipe. He started a sort of online magazine called F1 Weekender. It's a bit like GP+. It's one of those ones where it can be a PDF or it can be in Flash and you click through and read all the pages.
Handy PDF download. Really like this one. Well done to 80.
Yeah, it's called The Weekender, but the first issue was released on Thursday, which confused me.
It does seem like a lot of work. I hope he can keep it up all year round, but definitely check it out. How do people find it?
It's at f1tailpipe.com and I think it's at the top at the moment, but we'll put a link in the show notes. The first issue has testing conclusions and thoughts on Alonso at Ferrari and the return of Schumacher.
And it's free.
It's a bit like Autosport Digital, although that is not free.
I am a big fan of Autosport Digital.
We've been asking for this
for a long time. My expectations this week. I am stunned by what they've done.
Basically, you can get the paper magazine online now. Obviously, it costs a bit of money, but it saves trees.
How much did it cost us? Was it 75 euros? 76 euros?
It was 76 euros because we already subscribed to the Plus edition of the Autosport site.
Okay, but it's worth it for us. We get to share it, so in theory it's half the price, but we get to download the magazine at the same time that it arrives in the shops. But not only can we download it, we can search it because it's downloadable PDFs.
Yeah,
which
well,
is excellent.
Like we said, this is what we wanted when they announced that rankings thing, which, by the way, no one seems to be talking about anymore.
No mention of it. Let's hope that people do talk about Autosport Digital, though, because I'm a big fan of this and I hope it's really, really, really successful. We know that offline standard newspaper, what do you call them? Magazines. That's the word for it. We know the magazines aren't selling. They're hemorrhaging sales and it's not looking good across all sectors. It's not just motorsport that have the problem with magazine sales right now. No one's out there. No one's in the newsagents. No one's buying this stuff anymore. Certainly not in the quantity that they need to. Digital is good. Digital is fast. It's searchable. It's downloadable. I love it to pieces. I want more and more and more of it. I'm so impressed. I thought Autosport would go the flash-only route where you can't copy and paste it and it's basically locked and it's not very useful. They went the whole hog and congratulations for that because that's exactly what we wanted. I have no complaints. I can think of nothing that can be improved on it thus far. I love what I see. Let's have more of it. Roll on Thursday.
Next up, a message from Peter who says, "Hi, my name is Peter and I recently came across a few pretty interesting slash funny slash scary things. I wonder what you think. First of all, there was some news of making a movie about F1 a few times during the last few years. A lot of people seem to be enthusiastic about it, myself included. I have changed my mind big time after watching the last episode of CSI New York. I don't really watch the show, but someone said it's about racing cars, so I had to see it. It's hard to find the words. You just have to love the guest stars, engine sounds, Monaco 500 accident pictures, and a lot of other things. They don't have a clue what racing is all about. They shouldn't allow anyone to make a movie about F1 either."
Ah, see, I heard good things about this. There was some mention of it in the comments, and it starred Miss Danica Patrick.
Yes.
Is that right? And I heard, although she wasn't the best actress in the world, she never pretends to be. She never claimed to be. And it seemed to come across pretty well. They did a bit of research. I heard that they referenced Massa's accident, which that's surprising to me because you'd imagine that the people behind CSI New York wouldn't know too much about that. And there was other F1 references in there that you wouldn't expect to find. I haven't seen it. I can't comment on that. But it's a shame that Peter didn't like what he saw.
The second thing is Kimi Raikkonen and his commitment in the World Rally Championship. Have a look at this, and he's linked to a YouTube video where Kimi Raikkonen crashes into a snowbank, I think, and he's out of the car shoveling snow, digging himself out of the snowbank. It's brilliant.
They have to do that, don't they?
Well, yeah, but I never envisaged Kimi doing such a thing.
You always imagine he was a little bit aloof to shovel in snow.
Yeah, I thought he might get the other guy to do it. Anyway, Peter continues, by the way...
You crashed it.
This is true.
Wasn't the other guy.
By the way, if you have any questions about WRC, I think I know quite a lot about it. Just try me and ask. Cheerio.
Oh, yes.
And thanks for your delicious show.
Delicious?
Yeah.
Show. Delicious side podcast. Featuring lots of delicious.
That's from Peter.
We seem to have an awful lot of rally experts in our midst. Do you think it comes with the motor racing territory? Or is it us that is just clueless?
Well, definitely that. We also had a guest post from Lady Snowcat this week who went to see Kimi in Sweden.
That's another attending your race thoughts.
Yes.
There must be a more snappy name for that. Racing thoughts.
It's called, do you know the category on the website? It's called Your Stories, which I think is quite a snappy name for it.
That's much better. Yeah. I should have gone with
that. Maybe we should call it that.
Okay. If you have been to a race at any point, anywhere, rally or F1 or otherwise, you have a racing experience, do let us know. We'll call it Your Stories.
A couple more bits and pieces then. This is from Mike. He says, "Hi, Christine and Mr. C. Just catching up on a couple of your shows and wanted to respond to a fellow Canadian who wrote in a couple of weeks back regarding our TV coverage of F1 racing. It really isn't as bad as the writer made it out to be, so I want to clear the air. I am in central Canada and watch every F1 race in HD on TSN, our national sports channel. TSN broadcasts each race live and also Saturday qualifying with the same BBC commentary as the rest of the English world. Speed TV Canada usually has their coverage blacked out during the race as TSN owns the right to air, but Speed broadcasts Friday practice and usually the GP2 feature race if there is one. TSN and Speed TV are both included with any basic cable or satellite package, both offered in standard definition or high definition. Canada has two major satellite TV providers, so even if cable is not available in one's area, satellite is everywhere. There's no excuse not to have live F1 coverage in this country. Sure, most of the European races are on very early, but that's what DVRs are for. After all, I'd rather DVR a race and watch it a couple of hours later than have to wait 3 days to watch Lost, just saying. Huh. My one little beef with TSN is that if a race runs a little long, they will cut away before or during the post-race interviews. Speed TV continue their coverage, but again are blacked out due to TSN's broadcast rights. the cable and satellite providers should lift the blackout as soon as TSN ceases their coverage so that those of us who want to see it can see it. Love the show, guys. Keep up all the great work. Mike in Winnipeg, Canada.
Awesome. Thank you, Mike. So what my first...
You know what I think is interesting, sorry to interrupt, is that whenever, because I think last year we talked about, you know, tell us what coverage is like in your country. And it seems like Canada has a lot of people that want to tell us how their coverage is. And there's always a split in the opinion of whether it's good or bad. I think last
That's
time
a fair point.
We had this conversation, it was a lot of Canadians getting in touch.
True. And their opinions were divided. One thing that did stand out, I forget exactly what the line was, but something like every F1 race is in HD on TSN. Now, F1 isn't in HD, so presumably it's upscaled. That would be my first... I mean, you know, it's not true HD, because Bernie can't do true HD. Otherwise, the BBC would be broadcasting it as well, wouldn't they? So I can't understand that entirely.
Jake Humphrey retweeted a question to him that said, when is the BBC going to show F1 in HD? And his response was just, I think he must get that a lot.
Question a lot, yeah. I do believe... I can imagine he's probably sick of that. It's exactly what people want. It's just the BBC aren't in a position to do it because Bernie won't give it to them, and Bernie won't give it to them because there aren't enough broadcasters prepared to pay for it, and therefore the BBC are stuffed.
Now, I have some feedback for you about the website. Would you like the good news or the bad news?
First, I would like the good news.
Okay, this is from Daryl. He said, team, greetings from Sydney. I don't know who the team is. Is it just you and me?
Is it team greetings?
Team greetings, maybe.
From Sydney.
I have been following the podcast for some time now. Great work. But I have to say, I am speechless. I just tuned into your website for the first time in ages, having found the old one hard to navigate around. The new site is just brilliant. It's informative and cheerful. Great work. It's a pity that most of the paid media in F1 don't do anywhere near the job you two do. In fact, come to think of it, both you along with Joe make F1 interesting. I've just found how to make this comment. So with luck, you will get it. And I will be sure to comment more. Keep up the good work. Daryl.
Got it. And we will hold you to that, Daryl. We expect more comments now. Thank you, because we've been working hard on the website, as we've mentioned before. And if you're listening to the show and you're a regular listener but you don't necessarily go to the website, do so. Go there and tell us what you think of it, because you know, I agree with Daryl. I think it's brilliant too.
Well, you would say that.
What's the
you?
Bad news?
It's not really bad news, but Dr. J said, hi, Christine and Mr. C. Just thought I'd drop you a line to say thanks for the breakout threads. They really allow the time strapped amongst us to stick to purely F1 related discussions.
We do go off topic.
Just a small thing. I didn't realise they were breakout threads until you mentioned it on the podcast. The title on the homepage, Latest F1 News, and the list in the right hand column makes it look like every other blog site RSS feed combiner of F1 news from wherever. Given that I read my F1 news elsewhere and only come to side podcasts for the analysis and discussion, I never paid much attention to that area of the homepage until the podcast brought it to my attention. And lo, when I actually clicked on one, it's an actual post with insightful comments and discussion to be had. Anyway, you might want to rethink how you present the breakout threads on the homepage so it's a bit more obvious what they are. No point hiding one of the highlights of side podcast under a bushel. Cheers and keep up the good work, Dr. J.
Understood. Okay, message received on that one. I am hoping that when Dr. J says he gets his new F1 news elsewhere, he means F1 Minute.
Housekeeping. Really, the only housekeeping this week is our plans for the next few weeks, because did you know the racing starts soon?
Yeah, I'm actually looking forward to it. We're behind.
Not you
we're
as well.
So far behind on where we wanted to be before the beginning of the season. We're nowhere near, we're not even 50% done, really. But I am looking forward to seeing some more racing.
So next week, we're not doing an F1 debrief because several reasons. Firstly, there is testing in Barcelona on both of the days of the weekend, and that's the important test. So Saturday and Sunday, we'll be busy watching that.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, it is the Joe meetup on Friday.
Yes, it is in London.
And we're hoping to get some coverage of that. So we might be working on that, seeing what we can make of it. And thirdly, there is going to be the F1 Digest season preview coming up somewhere next week.
They were fantastic. Last year, you set such a high bar. Can you match it this year?
Probably not, but I'm doing my best. I tell you what, it doesn't help all these teams being bought and sold and changing their names and all that business. And there are still seats left.
Unfilled.
Yeah, yes. So
it's going to be out of date the minute you make it. You know that, don't you?
I do know that, and
but
that's fine.
That will be the story of this season. That's what it's going to be. Ever-changing F1. It never stands still. And good luck to you on your preview digests.
Thank you. So there's no show next week, and then the show after that is the last show before the season begins.
Woohoo! Off season is coming to a close.